to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present an assessment of some of the issues confronting the U.S. 1 year after the September 11th terrorist attacks with Reverend Myrna Bethke, whose brother died in the attack on the World Trade Center, who reflects on the mood of the country. Medea Benjamin, founding director of Global Exchange, who reports on peace vigils and other related events being organized around the U.S. to observe the first anniversary of the assault on New York City and Washington, D.C. And James Lafferty, director of the Los Angeles Office of the National Lawyers Guild, who describes the erosion of civil liberties he sees in the U.S. since September 11th. But first, we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
When Roberto Rabina Gonzalez, former head of Cuba's Union of Young Communists and mathematics teacher, was promoted to foreign minister in 1993, he was considered by some to be a potential successor to President Fidel Castro. After 6 years of service, Castro dismissed Rabina with almost no public comment and replaced him with 34-year-old Felipe Perez Roque. Rabina quickly retreated from public view, leaving many Cubans and foreign diplomats perplexed. Now, the charismatic 46-year-old Rabina has been formally dismissed from the Communist Party and banned from future leadership positions, with a recommendation that he be expelled from the Cuban National Assembly. Rabina has been accused of corruption and is alleged to have had a close relationship with former Mexican governor Mario Villanueva, who is now awaiting trial on charges of protecting the Juarez drug cartel on Mexico's Caribbean coast. Rabina allegedly made several trips through the Caribbean aboard Villanueva's private jet plane and received $25,000 from the former governor, ostensibly to renovate the Cuban foreign ministry. Rabina now works developing Havana's museums and refuted any suggestion that he might leave Cuba, stating that he is not facing any military or civilian trial. Rabina, who is now under attack, has expressed regret for his activities, stating in an exclusive interview with CNN that, "I committed many political errors, and especially ethical errors." However, a visibly emotional Rabina continued by saying that he considers himself a revolutionary who is willing to demonstrate with his attitude and words that confidence in him can be restored. The panorama of red sandstone buttes and deep gorges at Utah's Dead Horse Point State Park is one of the most breathtaking views in America. According to Mother Jones magazine, this area may soon be spoiled by the Bush administration's aggressive effort to open public land to energy development. Already, two oil drilling companies have permits to drill on land between Dead Horse Point and Canyonlands National Park. Environmentalists worry that such drilling activity could threaten the habitat for desert bighorn sheep, cougars, eagles, and hawks. Only a few years ago, the Clinton administration wanted to put land in this area off-limits to development and proposed a study to see if it should be designated a federal wilderness area. As Pete Morton of the Wilderness Society observed, "For extractive industries, it's one last time at the trough. They've got an oil man in the White House. If you put in roads, construct a drill pad, and cut trees, you can eliminate areas from wilderness consideration." On September the 21st, 2001, 10 days after the terror attacks that leveled both towers of the World Trade Center, thousands of office workers returned to their jobs in Lower Manhattan. President George Bush and then-Mayor Rudy Giuliani stated it was time to get back to life's routine. Federal Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Christine Todd Whitman asserted the air and water near Ground Zero was safe and no one should fear a potential health hazard. But according to the news magazine In These Times, the air near Ground Zero was still hazardous to rescue workers and everyone who returned to Lower Manhattan. As later reported by New York Daily News columnist Juan Gonzalez, around Ground Zero there were high levels of airborne asbestos, of lead and other heavy metals, as fires on the site still raged out of control in late September. The EPA posted air sample results on its website, but failed to establish any safety standards for many of the contaminants at Ground Zero. Dr. Marjorie Clark, a health researcher at Lehman College in New York, exclaimed, "What happened here is at the level of Watergate. They covered up information. It just seems to me a decision was made by some high-level government types that there was not going to be a problem here." This week's news summary was compiled by Denise Manzari and Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Nigel Rees.
first-year anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks arrives with enormous emotion, fear, and a determination to rise above the horrific violence visited upon the nation on that extraordinary day 1 year ago. People from all walks of life will gather for prayer services, family members of those killed will pause to remember their loved ones, and politicians will, no doubt, make speeches designed to evoke patriotism and boost their own careers. While many Americans have coped with the specter of September 11th by displaying flags and expressing support for military action against the perpetrators of the attacks on New York City and Washington, D.C., others most deeply touched by the violence have taken a different approach. The September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows was founded by relatives of September 11th victims. The group advocates a nonviolent response to terrorism and works towards breaking the endless cycle of violence and retaliation engendered by war. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Reverend Myrna Bethke, a member of the Peaceful Tomorrows group whose younger brother Bill died in the attack on the World Trade Center. Reverend Bethke, along with other surviving family members, traveled to Afghanistan in June, where they met relatives of those killed or injured in the U.S. bombing campaign there. She reflects on her loss and the mood of the country on the first year observance of the September 11th terrorist attacks.
My brother Bill, or we call him Billy, worked for Marsh and McLennan and had just been transferred up to the World Trade Center from a Princeton office about 4 months before September 11th. And I can remember on September 11th watching the news unfold, and it took me about 5 minutes to remember even that he had worked there. And then we joined all of the other people who started looking for those that we hadn't, you know, they hadn't heard from, and posted the pictures, searched the hospitals, put messages on the internet, hoping for some word. And then when you started seeing, you know, have you heard from anybody from Cantor Fitzgerald or Marsh and McLennan, you realized that those were the two companies who had taken the largest losses. And I think it was Thursday before we had it verified that he was on the 95th floor, which was right in the path of the first plane that hit.
How did you find yourself involved with this organization, September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows?
Well, after we got news of his death, I was also doing what needed to be done at the church in terms of holding church services. I think that's everybody was doing that. We kept our church open for that whole week so that people could come in and pray. I led a memorial service for my brother's company in Princeton the following week. But all through that time, I felt I was missing something, that there was something more I needed to do. But it wasn't until February that I found out about the group Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. And as soon as I heard about the group's formation, I knew that that's what I had been looking for. And it was really good to get together and talk with other people who had similar views, who, even though we had lost someone to violence, didn't think that violence was the way to respond in order to bring about any kind of justice or healing or reconciliation.
Reverend Bethke, your examination and reflection on what happened, and your joining up with this group, September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, brought you to Afghanistan. Tell us when you went and why you went.
Right. Well, I went to Afghanistan this past June. I spent 2 weeks there. I went at the invitation of Global Exchange, who had heard of me through Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. In June, they put together a delegation that was made up of clergy and laity from the three major faith traditions, Christian, Jews, and Muslims. There were 18 of us who went along. And for me, it was an opportunity to be together with a group of people who were committed to interfaith dialogue, but also kind of a chance to go to the place which gave birth in some ways to what happened on September 11th. And so I wanted to see for myself what kind of conditions existed in Afghanistan so that someone could come through and basically hijack their country for their own means, and to commit the acts of September 11th. And I also wanted to go to demonstrate to the people, not just in Afghanistan, but other places, that there were Americans who who would want to reach out in compassion and to look for peaceful ways to promote healing and reconciliation. In Afghanistan, I met a little girl named Amina, who's 8 years old. And Amina sat in front of about 25 of us one night and listed all of the family members that were killed in a U.S. bombing that missed its target. And again, I was struck that no child should have to do that for her parents and her families. And so I was even more committed that violence is not the way to solve any of our problems.
What's your sense of where Americans are at this first anniversary of September 11th? A lot of anger, a lot of patriotism was in the air immediately after the September 11th terrorist attacks. Do you think the American people in general have moved on from that to something else? And where do you think they are right now?
Actually, I think everybody's at different places in that grieving cycle. Some people who weren't affected as directly have certainly moved on. Their daily lives weren't changed in a lot of ways, although the specter of 9/11 still hangs over everybody. I think, as I've talked to different family members, we're all at different places in that grieving cycle as well. I know there are some people who are just now having funerals for those that were killed because they haven't yet found any remains. I think we're still really divided over how this is all going to pull together and don't have that kind of unifying sense of even to what do we do with ground zero after this. But there still is a sense, I've noticed people still treat each other with, I think, a greater kindness. We're more gentle with one another, and I hope that that continues. We were all treated with such grace and kindness. And I remember thinking how carefully people looked for the remains of persons at the particularly World Trade Center site. And then I hope that, you know, the next time 10,000 people are killed in a mudslide in Guatemala or somewhere else in the world, that same kind of care is extended to those events as well. And I hope we learned that from September 11th, and that we work really hard on that.
That was Reverend Myrna Bethke, a member of the September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. Contact the group by calling area code 415-518-1991 or visit their website at www.peacefultomorrows.org. As Americans observe the first anniversary of last year's attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the nation is confronted with yet a new war on the horizon. The Bush administration, after successfully toppling the repressive Taliban government in Afghanistan and striking blows against the Al-Qaeda network, is now poised to launch a new war on Iraq. The initial anger many Americans felt after September 11th was followed by mourning and sadness. Now, 1 year later, those emotions are mixed with a more sober assessment of the successes and failures of our nation's war against terrorism, the erosion of civil liberties, and reflection upon the condition of America's democratic values. Medea Benjamin is a founding director of the human rights group Global Exchange and a Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate from California in 2000. Over the past year, she organized travel delegations to Afghanistan made up of relatives of September 11th victims. More recently, Benjamin has helped coordinate hundreds of peace vigils, concerts, educational forums, and interfaith prayer services across the country in observance of the first anniversary of last year's terrorist assault on New York City and Washington, D.C. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Medea Benjamin, who describes the events being planned in towns and cities around the September 11th anniversary and what she hopes these gatherings will achieve.
Well, after September 11th last year, we focused first on the issue of hate crimes here in the U.S. and launched a campaign called No Hate in Our Communities. And then when the U.S. started bombing Afghanistan on October 7th, we began a campaign to talk about the Afghan victims, to say that war was not the answer, that killing more innocent people in the names of avenging the lives of other innocent people just made no sense at all. And we were able to take a number of families who lost their loved ones on September 11th to Afghanistan on two separate occasions to meet with victims there, which was a very profound experience. And then we started looking towards the first year anniversary of September 11th. And I think, like many of your listeners, perhaps, Scott, our first reaction was, uh-oh, you know, I don't want to even be there at the time. It's going to be flag waving. It's going to be glorification of war. Now we know it's going to be also a time when our president is calling for a new war in Iraq. And yet we had to face the upcoming anniversary and realize that the best way to face it was to turn it into a day when we honored those who died by saying no more innocent deaths, no more violence, no more war. So we put out a call nationally, and it was pretty remarkable the response that we got. We were asking people to organize either the weekend before, that's the 7th and 8th, or the date of September 11th itself. We now have created a new website called UnitedForPeace.org, and I think we'll have over 200 events that are happening all over the country on or around September 11th. They're happening in small towns in Idaho or in Tennessee, and they're happening in the big cities like New York and Washington. But it's been a really beautiful response and a time for people to come together and say, let us use this date in a way that builds a more peaceful world.
Maybe you could give us a brief rundown of the kinds of events that will be happening, as well as who's organizing them and the message that will be sent out from those gatherings.
Well, the beautiful thing about it, Scott, is that it's happening in ways that are different in every community and perhaps geared towards the being appropriate in different communities. In New York City, for example, there will be events taking place all week long, including one that people who lost family members are part of. That's an all-night vigil that'll be going on in Washington Square Park, starting at the evening of the 10th and going all the way into the 11th. In other places, a number of groups are putting up a war memorial that has the names of the people who died on September 11th, as well as the names of the Afghan victims that we at Global Exchange have put up on the United for Peace website, as well as victims of other violent acts throughout the year, some of them in Israel and Palestine, in Colombia, in the streets of our cities, as a way to say that all of these deaths are absolutely tragic deaths and we must find a way to come together as a world community to stop them.
Mandia, what do you hope comes out of these alternative and very different kinds of commemorations around the country, as opposed to some very stark talk about finding those responsible and killing them or bringing them to justice? What do you think these observations going on will contribute to the dialogue about that?
Well, let us remember that the way the Bush administration has responded to September 11th has been an absolute failure from the point of view of catching and bringing to justice those who perpetrated the crime. And so it should be a time also to reflect on if this way didn't work, if dropping over 20,000 bombs on Afghanistan did not lead to the capture or the death of Osama bin Laden or Mullah Omar or any of the top leaders of the Al-Qaeda network, then isn't it a time to perhaps think differently? And we're hoping that these commemorations, these peace gatherings, will do a couple of things. One is that it will bring communities together and start the kind of networking and outreach we need to do to stop this impending war on Iraq. The other is that we want to show both to the national press so that the larger public can see that there is a peace movement in the United States, that there are a significant numbers of people that include the religious community, youth, seniors, people of color, that are saying no to the response that the Bush administration has unleashed towards September 11th. And perhaps most importantly, at this really critical time in our history, we want this message to go out to the international community. We think it is really essential that the international community knows and recognizes that there is another face to the American public.
That was Mandia Benjamin, founding director of Global Exchange. Contact Global Exchange by calling 1-800-497-1000. 1994 or visit their website at www.globalexchange.org. White House and Congress, in reacting to the worst terrorist attack in U.S. history, were anxious to remove legal barriers to aid in the tracking down of the al-Qaeda terrorist network thought to be responsible. Since last September 11th, the civil liberties of those living in America, both citizens and non-citizens, have been curtailed more sharply than at any time since World War II. Various law enforcement agencies, through executive order and congressional authorization under the USA Patriot Act, now have greater latitude to hold individuals in secret detention, withhold legal counsel, and spy on people engaged in lawful religious and political activities. But cracks in this newly established national security state have already begun to surface. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court recently issued an opinion that criticized the FBI and the Justice Department for misleading the secret court's judges about requests made to authorize electronic surveillance. Elsewhere, a federal court in Cincinnati ruled that the Bush administration's practice of holding deportation hearings in secret was illegal, a decision the White House is appealing. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhu spoke with James Lafferty, director of the Los Angeles Office of the National Lawyers Guild. He assesses the erosion of civil liberties since September 11th and explains what protections have been lost, who's been targeted, and the laws established that weaken the Bill of Rights.
Well, there have been two main forms, of course. The USA Patriot Act is the principal one. That passed the Congress with little debate. There's also, of course, been a series of presidential orders. The USA Patriot Act, for example, makes grave erosions of our civil liberties. It permits, for the first time, the disclosure of traditionally secret grand jury testimony in federal agencies. It permits roving wiretaps, thereby ensuring that virtually anyone's private conversations can be listened to. It permits the seizure of voicemail messages and permits Internet service providers to disclose the email messages of their customers. That's you and me. It permits sneak and peek searches that allow your home or my home to be searched while we're at work, and they don't even have to tell us about it after the fact or before the fact. It allows the government to listen in on confidential conversations between lawyer and client. Perhaps most draconian of all, the USA Patriot Act allows an alien who has due process rights under our Constitution, but it allows an alien to be detained indefinitely without trial, so long as the government brings that alien before a court every 6 months and says why it still wants to hold him. So really, since September 11th, I think the cumulative effect of all of this is that a portion of our First Amendment rights to free speech have been erased, a portion of our Fourth Amendment's prohibitions against unreasonable searches and seizures have been erased, a portion of the Fifth Amendment's guarantee of due process, the Sixth Amendment's guarantee of a prompt and public trial, and so forth, have been eroded without benefit of much debate, in many cases even far more restrictive of our civil liberties than we found during the Second World War when we actually were in a war.
Well, I know there were several hundred foreign nationals who were arrested after September 11th, and do we even know what's happened to them?
We do in some cases, and we don't in many cases, and to the extent we know, it's only because we've tried to fight it out in court to find out, and even where we've won some victories in those cases, that is the civil liberties community, the government is appealing those cases. They held at one point, we know, over 1,100 people incommunicado without bringing charges against them after 9/11, without allowing them to talk to a lawyer or anyone else. A lot of those folks were summarily deported. They've not brought charges still against any of those folks except for perhaps minor visa violations or something, you know. And they rounded up on two different occasions a total of about 10,000 Arab-American men in this country for no other reason other than the fact that demographically they were of a certain age and their origin was some Muslim country. And called them in for questioning and so forth, causing great intimidation to many, many people and giving rise to citizens in this country and residents in this country discriminating against their neighbors often because of that, creating a certain climate of fear of anyone who was foreign, and especially anyone who was foreign from a Muslim country or an Arabic country. So that's kind of reminiscent of what happened during the Second World War, and it took us 40 or 50 years to finally make amends for what we did to the Japanese Americans, and it's as though that lesson was not learned. And it isn't as though this has produced evidence of local terrorist acts by Arab Americans in this country. It's left us not any safer, and it's left us less free as a people. We have clients here at the Guild office, for example. One client had his email shut down by the email host, because under the USA Patriot Act, it's very vague. Any company that, by the wildest stretch of the imagination, could be said to have done anything which somehow aids terrorism can have their property confiscated by the government. So they shut down this fellow's email site, and what was this fellow doing with his website? He was selling books and tapes. What were the books and tapes? Speeches by Noam Chomsky, the noted historian, speeches by Howard Zinn, probably the leading living historian in this country today, speeches by Ramsey Clark, the former U.S. Attorney General. And we've been getting reports of that all over the place, where people who were doing nothing that by any stretch of the imagination isn't protected under our Constitution, and indeed encouraged under our Constitution, are losing their property and losing the right to use the Internet because the companies that host them are panicking in the face of this USA Patriot Act.
People like the National Lawyers Guild and the ACLU are certainly standing up to this, and have many lawyers have taken on cases, many pro bono. Is there any move that you're aware of in Congress to
sadly not much. Dennis Kucinich, of course, has spoken out against the USA Patriot Act. It passed the Senate, after all, remember, 98-1, and the House 357-66. But there is now a movement afoot in the country, organized by the anti-war and anti-repression movements in this country, to call for the repeal of the USA Patriot Act. But so far, I don't know any members of Congress that have taken up that call, sadly.
That was James Lafferty, director of the Los Angeles office of the National Lawyers Guild. Contact the Guild by calling area code 212-679-5100 or visit their website at www.nlg.org. You've been listening to Between the Lines, a weekly program presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. Between the Lines is produced at the studios of WPKN Radio. If you have suggestions for topics and guests, or would like a recording of today's program, please contact Between the Lines by calling area code 203-331-9756. Or write to Between the Lines, care of WPKN Radio, 244 University Avenue, Bridgeport, Connecticut, 06604. You can also visit our website at www.btlonline.org. Our theme music was written and performed by Mikata. This week's program is produced by Scott Harris with the assistance of Anna Manzo, Harry Minot, Bob Nixon, Nigel Reese, Melinda Tuhus, and Jeff Yates. For Between the Lines, I'm Denise Manzari.